What's up, everybody? It's NXpress time. Time for the Nintendoist time of the year. To help me do all of this nonsense that we're about to do, I've got Ricky D here.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? Tim, I got so much to say, but first we should introduce our guest host.
Right. Well, we should also introduce our regular host, Patrick, who's also here.
I could be a guest host. I've just been the longest running guest host of all time. That's all. I'm gonna try not to go too bah humbug on our topics today. I'm gonna stay positive, I think, for the holiday season.
I don't know what there's to be negative about, Patrick. I'm curious where you're going with this.
Not but also, too negative. Yeah.
Okay. But some negative.
Just a little bit.
A breath of negativity.
It wouldn't be me without some negativity, right? We don't have the movie podcast anymore, so I got to be negative somewhere.
That's true. Also here is Harry Morris.
Hello, hey.
Welcome back, Harry. How's it going?
I'm back. It's going good, thanks.
So, really, really important to everything video games. Can you clarify this for us? You are from the UK, correct?
Yeah, I'm from England.
Okay. Do you guys say Happy Christmas?
I think we kind of say both. We say Happy and Merry. So, the best of both worlds.
There you go. So if you celebrate Christmas, they might say it differently somewhere. Other parts of the world also call it Hanukkah, which is weird. Just kidding. It's a joke. Guys, all right, never mind. We're moving on.
And the hate mail comes.
Totally kidding. Celebrate what you want. I really do not care. But what I do care about is Nintendo games, of which there are several to talk about. Including, we've got Xenoblade Chronicles 2 came out. Later on in the episode, we're going to talk about the second batch of Zelda DLC. And we also have some cool stuff with the Game Awards to talk about on top of our own game list.
And a lot of news. Lots and lots of news. Tim, I got to start off the podcast by saying I listened to your second podcast, your not as great as NXpress podcast, yet I love it and I think it's better podcast, Game Boys podcast. This afternoon at work, I figured I would relax. It would relieve me of some stress. And I was so incredibly angry. First of all, listeners, you should all listen to the Game Boys podcast. You can find it over at GoombaStomp.com. It's released every Monday right before the NXpress podcast gets released because Tim always has to do this thing where he has to beat us to the punch every single week. And I just want to preface this by saying that your co-host, Ryan Cappy, amazing guy. Ryan, thank you so much for sending me a Super Nintendo Mini, which, by the way, I actually started playing, which I want to talk about eventually during our news segment. But Ryan got me so angry listening to that podcast. And you too. Alex is cool, but especially Ryan, because he had nothing but negative things to say about Zelda, but yet, to him, it's an amazing game, top 5, and 9 out of 10. I'm like, what the hell, dude?
Ryan, okay, hell? since he's not here to defend himself, Ryan is one of my best friends, but his opinions often are just like the antithesis of mine, and so we're both extremely stubborn people, so every once in a while, it's just like forces of will colliding. The problem is that I've always been a writer. I don't mind public speaking. And so I always like vocalize my opinions and try to put it the most eloquent way possible. And Ryan just tells it like it is. And so it's always interesting where it's like, wait a minute, Ryan, how are you getting from one of the best games of the year, but you don't even like it?
I know, right? I will agree with Ryan that although I think the Nintendo Switch is the console of 2017, like when people look back at 2017, you're right, Tim, it's all about the Switch. But I still think that the PlayStation 4 overall had the best library of games. But the Nintendo Switch is the console of the year.
And I mean, undoubtedly a bigger library of games, too, which makes a difference for a lot of people. For people like Ryan, and I didn't acknowledge this on our podcast, and so I'll acknowledge it here when he can't say anything and he can't feel like he's right. For a lot of people, like, the amount of games really matters. And for someone like Ryan that's going to play all the most critically acclaimed games of the year, that really, really makes a difference. Whereas I look at, like, the Switch, I see two games that are debatably the best game of the year, Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild. And I'm like, yeah, you won. You did it. You had the best year because you had two games that I think are better than anything else that came out this year. Like, personal opinion. I can't just blanket statement that, but, you know.
At the end of the year, we're going to be doing our year in review. We're going to do it at the very end of December. We're going to talk about Nintendo 2017. We're going to look back at 2017, and we're going to decide if it's the best year Nintendo's ever had. So I'm not going to dive too deep into this conversation today, but, you know, financially, commercially, critically, like, Nintendo's just, like, knocked it out of the park. Like, their games have sold well. The consoles sold well. Like you said, Tim, two of the best games of the year released on a Switch. If I'm not mistaken, now, we haven't yet totaled up the nominations, but I do believe at GoombaStomp.com, four, if not five, games on our top 25 games of 2017 have been exclusively released on a Nintendo Switch. I also just want to quickly mention that tomorrow, as in, like, the day you should be listening to this podcast and or the day it will be available to listen to, it is our two-year anniversary over at GoombaStomp.com. And so every year for our anniversary, we try to do something big. Last year, we published a list of the 25 best games of this century, which we actually got a lot of positive feedback on. Like, people actually really liked our list. This year, we're doing something incredibly ambitious. It's like insane. It's like, Tim, I just want to shoot myself for even wanting to do this. We are publishing a list of the 200 greatest Nintendo games ever released, and this was a pain in the ass to do. Now, first of all, I just want to make something clear. This is not a ranking. We're not ranking the list. It's not like from number 200 to 100, 100 being the best. It's a chronological list, like a list in chronological order of all the games that Nintendo has released exclusively for the Nintendo consoles since the NES days. And it's really interesting looking at the list, and I hope our readers and listeners get to actually, you know, dive deep into the list and get to see our choices and picks and why we chose them. Because when, at the end of the year, Tim, when we decide if this is the best or at least the second best year for Nintendo, I think we're going to have to rely on that list, because it's an interesting list, dude. I'm not going to give away too much information today. We're going to talk about next week. But what's interesting about the list is we had 500 nominations. And of the 500 nominations, most of the nominations came from the Nintendo Entertainment System. Like, Patrick, there was like, what, 150, I believe?
Something like that.
It was like a lot. And, you know, like, the thing is, a lot of our writers are younger than us. My first console was the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, but my older brother had the NES, so I've played all of the NES games, or almost all of them. So clearly, some of the NES games that I think should be maybe included in the list didn't make it in. But that said, a lot of NES games made the list. I would say about 35, if I'm not mistaken, which is a lot considering, you know, 35 out of a 200. That's a good portion of the list is dedicated to the NES. But what was interesting, Tim, is so we broke up the list in decades. It was like 1980 to 1990, 1990 to 2000, 2000 to 2010, 2000 to 2018. I actually had to break up the 2000 to 2010 list in half. And then, Tim, I had to break up the 2000 to 2005 list in half, because half of the games on our list, the 200 greatest Nintendo games ever released, came out between 2000 and 2005. So when we decide what is the best year Nintendo's ever had, I think we're going to have to really consider those years, 2000 to 2005.
What did you say about N64 being the greatest console of all time, Ricky?
Wait a second. Part of that is, of course, the age of the people making most of the nominations, too, because that was their heyday. That was their childhood years right there, and that's the nostalgia-forming years. So I have no doubt that that plays a large role in whether or not they consider those to be the greatest Nintendo games of all time. So we can certainly, it's certainly worth taking a look at, but there's, I'm sure there's some bias involved in that as well.
Yeah. Yes and no. What's interesting is, personally, when I look at the list, I think the list is fantastic. Like, there are maybe two games that I would say should be on the list, but are not on the list. But here's the thing. I've never played those two games. One is 999, which I think got released for the Wii, which I've never played, but everyone went apeshit over. And the second game is one of the Monster Hunter games that was only released in Japan. But I look at the list, Patrick, and I swear to God, like, there's not one game that I think should, like, the key word here is should be on that list. That's not on the list, apart from those two games that I haven't played. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of NES games that I would like to see featured on the list. But in terms of listing off the most influential, groundbreaking, popular, whatever, games released exclusively for Nintendo Entertainment System, I think we actually did a really, really good job.
Yeah, it came out pretty good. It's a pretty solid list, and you'll never get a list perfect, obviously, because once you limit it, then something's going to get left out, right? So even games that people could make a successful case for were going to get left out. That's inevitable.
Yeah, and then there's always going to be, like, the issue with ranking them initially to get this list. Everyone is putting in their top 25 favorite or the games they thought were best either way. And there are so many issues that came out of that. Because I'm like, behind the curtain look at this list, we had to, like, stop ranking them and just release them by decade because it was so controversial. And so, Ricky, you were about ready to kill some of our writers, I think.
Oh my God, it was a nightmare. Like, there were so many problems. Okay, just a few quick problems for our listeners. You might be interested in hearing about this. So we had this problem in which I entered, like, about 10 capsule reviews into a post, and for whatever reason, it didn't save. And we had this problem, like, way back when we used to write for Sound and Sight, where, like, when two editors go into a post, it won't save any of the changes because there's two editors in the post and, like, WordPress has, like, this weird glitch. I think that's what happened. So it caused a lot of confusion because there's all these missing capsule reviews. And then we had, like, one game listed twice for some odd reason, Baseball Stars. So we actually had two.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So we actually had 199 games because that game took up two spots. And then when we looked at what would come next, there were so many ties. There was, like, 12 games tied for, like, the 200 spot. So we had to figure out what to do. And anyway, so it was this big, huge mess. And I think, like, the thing is, it's like, it's not that I was mad at anybody, but, like, if we had, like, and like you said, Patrick, no list can be perfect. Like, the bottom line is, even when it comes to ranking our favorite games of 2017, there's been, like, over 1,000 games released this year, if not more, you know? And, like, nobody can play all of these games. You can't get a true sort of, like, ranking of what the best games of 2017 are, no matter what publication you work for. Like, not even IGN can do it. I mean, I listen to NVC every week, and they're talking about how they're still playing games like Persona 5 because they need to catch up, and they're not going to finish those games before the end of the year, you know? So there's only so much you can do. At the end of the day, I think, like, the list is, like, at least for me, like, the reason why I like to do these lists come December is because it's sort of like a snapshot or a reflection of our website and our staff. Like, these are the games that we love the most, that we've been playing the most in 2017. And with the Nintendo list, it's these are the games that we've played growing up and the games that we feel are the most influential and the best, right? And so it reflects really the staff. And you can't get a perfect list. It's impossible. Like, none of us have played every single video game out there. But what's great about our staff, though, is, you know, I might not have played all of the Fire Emblem games, but we got guys like Taylor and Tyler who have played every single one of the games in that franchise, and they know those games inside out. So when they vote those games and they rank them high, you know, they're not ranking, like, the shittiest Fire Emblem game. They're ranking, like, the best of the best, right? So it's interesting, and I can't wait to publish it. The first post, because it's separated into seven articles, will be published on December 13th, which is our anniversary, which is tomorrow. And this podcast will also be live, and we're going to be publishing one post per day.
I'm really looking forward to it, just because, like, it's not until you sit down and write down your thoughts on a game, often in retrospect, that you truly understand the caliber of the game. Like, I got to do New Leaf, and I walked away, and I was like, damn, that game's near flawless. Like, I can't think of a bad thing about that game. And so, like, I just gushed about it for a while. I was like, it added a lot to the franchise. That's a really, really solid title.
I had to fill in for Mario Luigi Superstar Saga, and all I want to do this week is buy the 3DS remake that they released earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah. Soon, as a talk spot, we're just going to have to talk about the state of the 3DS, because it's in an interesting state, but there's some good stuff there still. Anyway, Undoubtedly, the Switch is in a really, really good state, and the likes of Xenoblade Chronicles are helping with that. So do you guys want to talk about that for a bit?
Yeah.
So don't go anywhere, because when we come back, Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Gramps, do you remember anything?
I remember crashing through many trees before landing here. They probably fell off then.
That's not a whole lot to go on.
Perhaps we would have some luck following the trail of broken trees.
Good thinking, Pyra. Let's go.
By the way, Rex, is that a core crystal I see shining on your chest? Just what happened to you?
I'll tell you later. Right now, we need to find Nia.
Oh-hoo! Now this makes a nice change.
Welcome back to N-Express. We're going to really start off the episode with a talk about Xenoblade Chronicles 2, the latest game to come to the Switch, which, count of hands, who's played it?
I played it.
I have.
I have as well.
Okay, so three of us. That's good. I have not. So I'm not going to take the front seat here. It's on my list of games that I will wait until I have Christmas money to play. So, Harry, we're going to start with you because you wrote our review at GoombaStomp.com right now, which all of you listeners should morph into readers and go check out. Harry, what are your thoughts on this game?
Okay, like, I like it, but it also really frustrates me. So I gave it like a 7 out of 10 in the review, and that still stands because it's like really ambitious as a game, which I really respect. Like, they tried so much, and you can see there's so much effort and heart in there, but it really, really gets on my tits massively, and it annoys me.
Did you say it gets on your tits?
It gets on my tits, right on them.
All right.
It feels like, okay, so I've done 60 hours on it. I've gotten really far into it, but for about 40 hours, 45 hours, I really enjoyed it. For like 15 hours, though, I pretty much didn't like it, and that's kind of the issue. So I feel like there were issues that were cropping up through my experience, but it just got too much at the end, and I just felt like I'm not having fun with this anymore. And there's a few things. So like one of them is the fact that I think the game steals a lot of control away from the player. So like you could be in an encounter and you'll be fighting an enemy, and right at the last second, maybe you're like you're about 30 seconds from beating this enemy, and a level 80 enemy will come in and just one shot kill you. And it always begs the question of like, I did nothing wrong there. I was just fighting this enemy, just doing my thing. And the game decided this other enemy was going to pass by and do that. So this thing will happen that's completely out of your control. It's completely down to the game to dictate it. And it ruins your experience. And that's what really annoys me about it, is the fact that the game decides so many shitty things and it ruins your experience so much with it. On another occasion, I was fighting this kind of secret boss, and it was on this really small little walkway, like this catwalk, and it was propelled like kind of high up in the sky. It was like up there, and really small platform, and I was fighting him for about 5 or 10 minutes, and I got his health down to like 50%, thinking, oh yeah, I can do this, wicked. And then he just launched me off the platform out of nowhere. I fell down, it ended the encounter, and the last 10 minutes of play had just been wasted. And I just thought, like, I couldn't have avoided that attack, I couldn't have preempted it. And the game just decided, okay, fighting over now, like, it's going to end the encounter. And it was things like that that just really got on my nerves, because it just didn't feel fair. It felt like it didn't have any respect for you as the player. So,
what level are you at?
I'm at level 50 now, around that.
What chapter?
I think I'm, like, towards the end of chapter 4.
Okay.
So I'm pretty far in. I've done, like, 60 hours with it, so I've really experienced a lot of it. But I just felt like the more I went on, the more I just found myself getting annoyed. I'd fight like an enemy and they may like fall off a cliff and again, it'll end an encounter. And that happened so many times where you'd spend like ages fighting something before the game just decides, like for no fault of your own, this encounter will end. Either the enemy will launch you out of the arena, or the enemy will fall out of the arena, or your allies will fall out of the arena. And it's like when you want to fight, the game will find a way to make it so the encounter ends early. And then when you don't want to fight, when you maybe just want to walk through an area, the game will say all these level 90 enemies are going to chase you and like hunt you down. You can't escape them. And it's just moments like that. It just feels like I have no control here. I'm completely like my experience is entirely dictated by what the game decides for me in terms of its like AI. And that really gets on my nerves because it steals so much control away from you.
Yeah. I got to explain something to Tim. So, because you want to buy this game at Christmas time, right? So here's the thing. Harry said he's played 60 hours, if not mistaken. He's on chapter 4. There are 10 chapters in this game. Chapter 3 takes up about 35 hours to finish. Chapter 3.
Well, okay. Wait a second. So they have said that like chapters 3 and 4 are very long and they take up the vast majority of the game. And then the subsequent chapters go by very quickly. So they're saying it's about a 100-hour game. I mean, they are saying that it's about 100 hours to beat the campaign. 80 to 100. So that's what you're looking at, which is pretty similar to what X was. X was roughly around the same. It took you were going to have to play at least 80 hours probably to get to the final boss in X. It's just that the Xenoblade 2 goes about it in a different way. Look, I do like this game, and I don't. This is where I'm going to try not to go too negative because I have a lot of bad things to say about this game. But at the same time,
I've already taken care of that. Don't worry.
you definitely enumerated some of them there. There's no question. And there are some other things. I don't think the combat is as good. I don't think it's as flowing as the combat in X was. There was something to the combat in X that made me actually enjoy grinding. I had no problem grinding in that game whatsoever. I actually just liked going out and fighting things and trying out new tactics. But they've made this both simpler and more complicated at the same time. So the stuff that you can do if you don't understand their combos and fusions and elemental attacks and chaining things together, if you don't understand that, you are very, very limited in this game, which you were not in X. You had a lot of options in X how to do things and how to make stronger attacks. You also could switch back and forth between blades and guns, and so you were always attacking in some way, and you could also move and attack at the same time. Here, you have to stand still no matter what. So that makes positioning a lot harder because the enemies a lot of times will just turn and face you, especially if you're on your own. So the combat's not quite as free-flowing. It's okay. It's enjoyable enough. It is a little boring at times, especially if you're taking on a tougher enemy. Battles can go on for a long time. And when you're not good at doing those higher level things, then it can get a little tedious. The other thing that I don't think that this game does as well is the exploration factor. This world is not doing it for me, really. I feel like it's not designed as well as the world of X was. X really, everything felt very distinct in X, and plus the world also connected together, so you felt like you were really a part of a large place, whereas this is more like Wind Waker style, right? There's just different islands. But everything in X was very distinct, where I kind of knew where I was in any given world based on landmarks. And there were some epic, amazing landmarks in that game. Vistas that are unforgettable, really. I can still picture them right now in my head years later. This one doesn't have so much of that. The world doesn't seem quite as well designed. There seems to be, even though there's a lot of stuff in there, it seems a bit more jumbled. Like they threw in a lot of colors, but they didn't make anything very cohesive. It's okay, and there are moments of beauty in this world, but it's not quite the magnificence that X had. And because of that, the exploration takes a little bit of a hit. You seem to be more on a straight path with this, whereas X really, I felt like I could branch out and discover lots of things. And there were a billion side quests in X, which a lot of people complained about, but I am now seeing, I think I actually prefer the way X doled out side quests than to how this game does it, which are there are much, much fewer of them. And there, even though they're maybe a little bit more engaging, they don't offer you a lot of options. Like X allowed, if you were at a low level, there were still a ton of side quests that you could do. And you could actually determine whether or not you were high enough for that level because the side quest was given some kind of rating. So you could just look at it and say, oh, I'm not going to be good enough for that. Or, yes, I can take that one. I'm powerful enough to take that on. There were lots of little things that X did much, much better and was much more polished on. I feel like this, like Xenoblade 2 was a bit rushed. That being said, I am still having a good time. The story is completely ridiculous for me. Other people may find it touching and emotional, but I find the dialogue to be hilarious. So that's partially why I'm entertained by this. I don't know what you think of the accents, Harry, but Rex is I don't know. He's like he sometimes gets on my nerves.
I kind of agree. I think the accents are really annoying. I think some of the characters have really good voice actors. I think Pyra sounds great.
Pyra is fantastic. Whoever did that, she's got an American accent, but whoever did that one, she
Hold on a second. I actually think the voice acting is fantastic. I actually, you know what? I was afraid to talk about this game, guys, because the more I listen to you guys and the more I want to talk about it, the more I realize that I actually do not like this game. The best thing about this game, actually, no, like, Tim, hear me out. I'm going to explain why. I think, I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm just saying I don't know. I don't think I like this game. The best thing about this game, I honest to God think, is the voice acting. Because how often have we complained about voice acting in video games? The voice acting is not bad, even for a character like Rex. Like, the actor who was directed to play his role actually does a good job for how he was instructed to speak as Rex. Like, Pyra's fantastic. The voice acting is great. But, like, and you know, Patrick, like, here's the thing. Like, the first, like, 3 hours of this game, there's about 5 minutes of gameplay. 5 minutes. There's about, what, 15 minutes of tutorials, and there's about 3 hours of cutscenes, okay? And, like, it's funny because I'm the guy who loves story in video games. I'm the guy who loves Telltale games. I'm the guy who loves Life is Strange and Oxenfree. And I'm playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and for the first, like, 3 hours, I've done nothing but watch cutscenes. It's like watching an anime on Netflix. And I'm like, where is the actual gameplay? I understand the tutorials, but, like, the first two chapters, like, 90% of those first two chapters are essentially cutscenes. Chapter 3, like I said, is incredibly long. I think it's the longest chapter in the game, which is sort of problematic because it hurts the pacing of the game. Like, you kind of want gamers to kind of feel like they've reached a certain point, accomplished something, so they're, I don't know, they have that motivation to continue. But when you're on, like, hour, like, 30 and you haven't yet finished chapter 3, it kind of makes you think twice about whether or not you want to continue playing this game. That's not good for pacing. So pacing wise, I give it a zero. In terms of, like, the story, I give it, like, maybe one, only because the voice acting is great. Because the story is not revolutionary, it's not groundbreaking, it's not amazing, it's not Shakespeare. But the problem is there's just so many cutscenes, I just want to play a damn game at the same time.
Now see, I don't find the number of cutscenes, I wasn't bothered by. I didn't feel like it was that intrusive as you do.
The thing is, I like the cutscenes, but here's the thing. The last thing I was going to bring up is the exploration factor of the game. Like, that's what I was kind of hoping for, Patrick. Like, I like the world. I like the ideas behind building this world. The fact that they're floating in the clouds. The fact that they have, like, these giants that they can ride. These titans. I like the characters, you know. I like the political angle. Like, the way the characters sort of, like, backstab each other. Like, I like all of that stuff. But then when I'm roaming around, in terms of, like, exploration, like, what exactly do you find? Do you find a treasure chest? Like, that's all you find repeatedly, like a treasure chest, which you have to maybe pick lock. And then you can do whatchamacallit when you dive into the clouds and sort of, like,
You can salvage.
Salvage, exactly. Yeah. And that's about it. And what do you get? You get, like, money, gold, jewels. Like, it's just, it's not, like, the sort of exploration that I was hoping for. And so, all in all, I find this game incredibly frustrating. Harry, for you to tell me that you spent 60 hours playing the game and it gets even more frustrating, man.
Here's the thing as well. Like, so when I play games like this, I really like to go for 100%. I like to know I can do everything. What I feel like it does is that every time you feel like you're getting close, it will introduce something else where you're just like, oh, for God's sake, that's going to take me ages. This is a tiny spoiler, but I don't think it's too big. So obviously you have Poppy, who's like your artificial blade, and you have Poppy Swap, which is a form of upgrading her, and it takes a very long time. You have to play the little mini game, and it's very tough to do, but it's something you can do over time. I think it's towards the end of Chapter 3, you actually unlock a new variation for Poppy, which counts as a new blade, and she gets her own Poppy Swap. So now you have two Poppy Swaps to upgrade, and you just think one of them is, like, enough. Like, one of them is so much. We don't need another. That's just, like, a whole of a spiel of shit to do to get to 100%, and it's not particularly fun because you just have to repeat that mini game, that little retro mini game, Tiger, again and again. It's just not particularly fun, really. Do you know what I mean? It's like it constantly throws things at you. It's not mandatory, but if you're someone who wants to maybe level up all your characters and do everything, you're going to find there's a lot of stuff you have to slog through, And I don't think that's particularly fun. I feel like it sort of disrespects the player's time.
Okay, but that's for someone like you that wants to 100% the game. But like, just in general, like the overall game, there's in my opinion, there's so many problems. Like I mentioned, the pacing, the fact that there's not really much to explore, despite the fact that they managed to build this beautiful world, and yet there's nothing in it. And then the other problem I have with the game, which is like my big beef, like this is my biggest problem with the game, is I can't stand the battle system. I hate the battle system. It's so now, complicated for no reason.
Now, here's the thing. I mean, you could say that about a lot of JRPGs these days. A lot of them have complicated battle systems where you really need to be aware of your positioning, your buffs, debuffs, everything like that. You have to know your combos and all that kind of stuff. Like, I find them always super complicated, which is why I don't play JRPGs that often. With Xenoblade X, I was able to grind and avoid a lot of that stuff, and I got to understand the system well enough that I was able to be successful and get all the way to the end through grinding, and I was probably at a higher level than most people were when they finished that game. But I didn't mind grinding because I liked exploring that world. There was more incentive for me to go out and do things. This one, I think the combat's fine. It's not as good as X. That's the problem. I really, really loved the combat in X. And so now I'm like, I'm a little bit bored by this because it's a step down. As for the exploration, like, again, X just did that better. It had more incentive for you to get out of the world, and it had a more variety to its world. There were things to find and stuff to do. But for the pacing, I actually like the first few hours of this game a lot more. Chapter 3 has been too long, stuck in the belly of that thing. I don't find the environment particularly pleasing aesthetically, and I'm stuck in this thing forever.
But that's now, the problem with pacing, though. That's chapter three, dude.
But again, they like for some reason they made 3 and 4 really long, and then they made the other one short again. Like 1 and 2 are fine. I actually thought like going from 1 to 2, I was zipping along. I was kind of enjoying the breezy story, which is, you know, again, it's fluff, but so are almost every JR. Look, you know what I think about story. Nobody's going to impress me with that in a video game. But I think it was zipping along. It was hitting its beats. And I thought that the action was building. It kept getting a little more complicated, but nothing overly so. They were sort of teaching you new systems, adding new characters. And I thought that it was working really well. And then chapter three comes along, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this to be over. Anytime now, guys. Anytime. And I've hit a little roadblock, and now I know I have to go grind a little bit because I'm not good enough to take on the boss that I'm supposed to be fighting.
The boss at the end of Chapter 3 is actually really tough. That was the first time in the game where I had some trouble with something, and I had to go and grind. It's a tough one. I made a mistake earlier. I think I'm actually on Chapter 5, towards the end of Chapter 5.
I was going to say 60 hours from what the time is, you should be more like around there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm towards the end of Chapter 5. But I stopped playing it a couple of days ago because I'd kind of grown frustrated. And I went back to playing Persona 5. I'm about like 130 hours in now. And I've just been having so much of a better time. So it doesn't speak too well for Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
This is not a garbage game. It's definitely a role-playing game for JRPG enthusiasts. If you are a newcomer, do not. I'd warn you against this game a little bit. It's a downgrade in my eyes from X, which had far superior gameplay and pacing. Even though that game also had its flaws, it did things. It felt so much more polished than this one is. I feel like Nintendo maybe rushed to get this out so that they had a big December release. This could have used a little more time. I'll still be curious as to what Monolith does next, but I don't believe this was the big hit I don't think this was the follow up to Xenoblade Chronicles that people wanted. Although then again, I wasn't really a fan of Xenoblade Chronicles, so maybe the fans of that original game love this one because X wasn't really big on their list, and it was on mine. I loved X. I could play that again, probably. I could start that game for 100 hours.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, it all, for me, comes down to the battle system and the fact that this is still a video game and I want to enjoy myself. Like, I was talking to my friend about this, and I was like, have you ever seen that Chantal Ackerman film that's like 12 hours long, and the entire film is like a static camera shot of this lady doing house chores? And it's considered like a work of art and like one of the greatest films ever made, but it's like 12 hours long watching a lady do house chores. It's like this feminist piece, right? I'm like, okay, so you can appreciate it as a work of art and like it, but I don't want to sit there for 12 hours and watch this movie of some lady doing house chores. Like, this feels like a chore, and I feel like a lady lost in this world because I don't understand the battle system. I will say, in closing, because I'm going to play some more of this game. We'll come back and talk about it in a few weeks. But the last thing I'm going to say is I do think it has one of the best soundtracks of the year. No surprise. Yeah. The soundtrack is brilliant. Yeah. Like, brilliant.
Yep.
I'll add as well, if that's all right. I do still like the game, like, and it does have a lot of great points. I do think the environments, even though they're maybe not interconnected, I think they're still really impressive. And even the voice acting, even if it's a bit cheesy at times, it kind of grows on you in a weird way. When you get so far into the game, you kind of like it. I don't know, maybe it's just like Stockholm Syndrome, but I'm kind of partial to it now.
The voice acting's amazing! Guys, the voice acting...
If
best
I
thing about
hear
the game.
Rex, if I have to hear Rex ask one more time, do you mean Pyra when somebody mentions the Aegis? Oh my God, yes, the Aegis is Pyra. Everybody has put this together. Yes, they mean Pyra.
That's what I love about Rex, though. He's like adorable. He's like strong, brave, but yet naive. Not exactly like the brightest cat on the block.
He's not the brightest.
No, but that's what I like about him. He's like a ditz. But
to be honest, I do agree with Ricky here. Yeah, even though I think the voice acting can be pretty irritating at times, it also does kind of grow on you. And the battle system, even that, I think, even though it's not as polished as X, and it is a little bit convoluted. Like, something I find to be a problem is that there's so much going on screen, but you can't really see what your opponents are doing and like what attacks they're launching, because there's physically so much on screen. But there are definitely fun moments to the battle system with elemental combos and with various things.
Did you say a little bit convoluted? This thing makes Mr. Robot Season 2 seem like Sesame Street. Like, what are you talking about? It's but so complicated.
The difference between this game and X is that X also had convoluted combat if you were willing to take the time to do it, but you didn't have to. And the problem with Xenoblade 2's combat that I'm finding so far is that you have to learn some of this stuff or you will be crushed. So we'll see how far I can actually make in this game. This again, Rick, if you're not enjoying it, I this is one of those games I would advise somebody to sit down before you waste too much time in. I'm going to give it, you know, a little while longer because I'm actually having a decent time with it, and I'm going to see where grinding gets me and whether or not I can learn the combos while I grind, whether I can successfully learn the battle system. If I can't, I will have no problem putting this down because I don't want to be frustrated for another 30 or 40 hours only to realize that I'll never be able to beat the game anyway because I'm not good enough at it. So this is a hardcore JRPG fan thing for sure.
Thing is, I love JRPGs. I absolutely adore them, but this is just one that's just not really grabbed me. I think if you're not sure about the game, if you're unsure, what you should do, Ricky, is play Persona 5 because it's way better.
I've already played a bit of Persona 5 and it's incredible. My nephew has it and he's gonna lend it to me. What do you think I'm doing during the Christmas holidays, during my break?
That game makes my dick hard. It is so good. Throbbing hard and stiff. It is so incredible. Persona 5 is honestly, I'm like 130 hours into it, second playthrough, and I'll put it down for a while and I'll go back, and every time I go back I just love it and I just get so into it, so addicted within like an hour. So yeah, it is really cool. And
yeah, we've talked about it on the podcast a bit because I kind of wish it would get released for Nintendo Switch, and I know there's like that whole thing where Sony sort of helped finance the game, and so it might not ever happen, but it kind of feels like it's a perfect game for the Switch. And I hate to say this each and every single week, but when you have a game like Persona 5 and it requires about 100 plus hours of your time, it's great to have that game on the go. And that's an easy game. That's an easy game to play on the go. So, Sony, if you're listening to our podcast, make it happen.
Well, that's one good recommendation. I don't know if I'm going to buy this, but just real quick to end the discussion, I want to hear from each of you. Would you recommend this game? If not, what someone should buy instead? So I'm guessing, Harry, you're going to say no because Persona 5 is a thing.
I'm going to say if you loved the first game, then yeah, get it because you will love this. If you weren't a big fan of the first game like me, I think you'll still enjoy this game, but it will get on your nerves. I think you'll be like mixed on it. So I would maybe recommend it based on your opinion on Xenoblade Chronicles 1.
All right, yeah, Patrick.
For me, I would say that almost the same thing. If you love the first one, you'll probably like this one a lot better than I did. If you're an X fan, because these fans seem to be split, right? Xenoblade Chronicles fans are split on X and just the regular ones. If you're an X fan, you're going to be a little let down by this. You still might enjoy it a little bit. This is where I didn't want to go too negative, because I am, you know, like 16 hours into this game, and I'm still going to keep playing it because I'm not having a horrible time. I'm just sort of I'm just tentative right now. I am enjoying enough of it where I want to keep going. If I do hit a roadblock where it gets to be too frustrating, though, the game hasn't captivated me enough for me to like persist. I probably will have no problem setting it down if I run into a long, like a hardcore setback. So, but other than that, I am enjoying it enough to keep going forward.
And how about you, Ricky?
Okay, so like if I could adopt Rex, because I don't have any kids, I would adopt him, but I would be like, dude, we're taking you out of this game. We're going to put you in a better series. We're going to put you in Fire Emblem, maybe Fire Emblem Warriors, and we're just going to forget that this game exists. I don't know if that answers your question. No, but in all honesty, like, there's a lot
deep thinking.
There's a lot to admire about this game. I think a lot of people will like it. I know a lot of people do like it. I'm just saying, for me right now, I'm not sold. I'm going to continue playing it, and I'm going to give it a second chance, but I'm not going to dedicate 100 hours of my life playing this game if I'm about 15 hours in. I find that I'm not enjoying myself. So, you know, there's a lot of games out there to play, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
There is a lot to enjoy. There's a lot that you can have fun with. And like I said, for about 40, 45 hours, I had a great time. But for like 15 hours, I wanted to kill myself, and that was sort of the issue.
All right. I think I might have to pass. But anyway, there's still much more episode to hear on your end. So, listener, don't go anywhere. I believe your time with us is unfortunately up. So it where is. Can we find you online?
I write for a site called Goomba Stomp. You may have heard of it, but I'll be on there. And I'm on Twitter, but I only use it to post Goomba Stomp articles that I've written. So, yeah, that's at @Harry_Morris_, I believe.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, and I'm sure we'll
thank you for having me. Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me. See you soon.
Happy and Merry Christmas.
Happy and Merry Christmas.
Or whatever you celebrate.
So why you guys even... Well, I guess that's a stupid question.
Indeed.
Seriously, it's good to see you. And you're all right.
Right back at you. Hey, by the way, what happened to the big guy who saved us? The Titan?
Are you talking about me?
Wait, what? How?
That's sort of a long story. Let's get somewhere we can rest. I'll tell you all about it then.
That seems prudent, my lady.
Sure, lead the way.
Welcome back to N-Express. We're in our final segment, which we are just going to call the catch-up segment, because we have a lot to talk about in the Nintendo world. We have new Zelda DLC. We have the Game Awards just happened. Fans of Nintendo, we've got to talk about that. And then there's just other stuff going on. So why don't we go ahead and just let's get the Game Awards out of the way, because as a Nintendo podcast, we would be remiss if we didn't laugh in the face of everyone, because Zelda Breath of the Wild is the best game of the year.
Yeah, did you watch a show?
I didn't watch the show. I watched highlights of the show, and there was a lot of really cool stuff there.
It was actually a really good broadcast. I think it was last year. It might have been the year before. I was a little critical in the host. I said the guy seems like a really nice dude. Just didn't necessarily make the best host. I thought he did a fantastic job this year. I thought the whole thing was airtight. It was never boring. I never once wanted to walk away from my computer. The way it was organized, it just went by so quick. And like, there was like the best moment of the whole entire show was when the developer, the creator of that game, No Way Out, who developed it with EA, came out and he started talking trash about EA and the Oscars. I don't know if you saw that bit.
Tommy Wiseau was at the Oscars, you guys.
Yeah, that was amazing. And it's funny because right before he came out and said the Oscars, I kept thinking that this show is so much better than the Oscars. Like, I actually thought it was incredibly entertaining. They did a good job in mixing a lot of world premieres. We saw a lot of footage of new games. The DLC for Zelda got announced. Bayonetta 3 got announced, not to mention 1 and 2 is coming to Switch next year. And, you know, like, just the pacing overall, I thought that they did a fantastic job. In terms of the winners that they chose, I haven't played all of the games, but I thought they did a good job in choosing the winners. What I find interesting, though, is that the ballot is split between fans and critics. And so I think it's like they said that they had 52 critics that voted, and then they had the fans that vote, and then doesn't really make sense, though, because then it's split between the fans and the critics. So what happens, for example, if the fans pick Persona 5 and the critics pick Zelda? How do you split it? It's splitting two ways, not three ways.
I would imagine that there's a weighted vote to it. I guess that the critics, they're weighted towards the critics, not the fans. The fans get you know, a portion of that, and they get to contribute a little bit, but the critics are the ones whose votes carry just a little more weight than that, so they can push something over the edge if they need to.
And maybe rightly so. Like,
yes.
When thinking about something like the Oscars, for example, what kind of nonsense would occur if it was 50-50 split between the audience and the Academy, people that watched all of the most critically acclaimed films in order to vote, and then...
But you might end up getting better results, because the problem with the Academy, not to talk too much about movies here, is that you have these celebrities, these actors, these directors, producers, who are very, very busy people, and they do not have time to watch all of these movies. And I've read a lot of interviews and spoken to a lot of people about this, and a lot of them admit to not having watched about 9 out of 10 of the nominees. And so they're going to vote for the movie that they watched and or the movie that their friend worked on. And that's the problem with an award show like the Oscars. Like, you have a bunch of industry people voting on industry films. So there's always like way too much favoritism and their bias, et cetera, et cetera. At least here they do split it between fans and the critics. And the critics, I mean, these are critics that work for publications like Polygon and IGN. Chances are they've played most of these games.
Yeah.
You know, and the Oscars, that's an industry award show. I mean, the fact that we all watch it as people, it speaks more to our fascination with celebrity than anything else. The Oscars is an industry show. It has nothing to do with us, and it should only be voted on by industry people. We just like to watch it because we like to watch movie stars. But this, this has a nice little mix, and I think critics should always be weighted a little bit more, because critics tend to see more than, you know, critics play more than fans play, for the most part. And are just better informed. Like, can you imagine if Marvel superhero movies were winning every Oscar? I mean, that would be kind of ridiculous.
That's what I was thinking.
So.
Well, at some might say, like, we would get a more realistic picture of what was actually
popular.
The best film or the best, not even just necessarily popular, because of the biases of the Academy Awards. Certain things are disincluded. So, for example... Have they announced the Academy Award nominations?
No, not yet. They've announced the Golden Globes. Academy Award nominations are always in January.
January.
So here's what I'm going to say, is that I'm betting you money James McAvoy doesn't get nominated for Best Performance for his work in Split, but he should get nominated at the very least. He should be nominated.
We're talking about an individual opinion, and we haven't seen everything, but critics have. And so that's why critics hold the most weight. Like, you might think that James McAvoy, that's your personal opinion, that he should be nominated, but that's It's not a fact. Like, that's, and just like any one of these games.
But it is, but it is a fact that he won't be nominated because that was a genre film.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true.
Well, I see Star Wars winning Best Picture, and that's a genre film, which might sound crazy because The Shape of Water is coming out. We're talking about movies on a video game podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
My question here is
the
that...
The point still stands. Like, critics, yeah. I think, are the ones whose votes should carry more weight with video games as well, because they play more, they're exposed to more, and they have a better idea of how the year shaped up in general. Plus, they're hanging around with the other critics at their place, like wherever they work, you know, Polygon, Game Informer, IGN, and they hear the buzz. They kind of know what's going on just a little bit more than your average gamer does.
Yeah, put it this way, if you were to get game developers to decide a nominees, it would be a giant mess because the game developers are busy creating games. It takes like years to make a game.
What
do critics and journalists do? They like, especially if you work at Polygon or IGN, they play video games. They go to work. That's why everybody now has a blog, because everybody wants to be the next Brian Altano or whatever. You know what I mean? They just want to get a job at some huge publication and do nothing but play video games and write about it, because that's their job, to play video games.
But so it's not just to play, but to think about them critically.
But it's easier if that's your job. It's like if you're hired to be in a movie and play Thor, and for 6 months you have to work out every single day for 4 hours, guess what? You're going to get beefed up, because that's all you do. Like, a person that works a 9-to-5 job doesn't have time to play video games, you know, from 9-to-5. So they don't have as much time to play these video games and have as much knowledge and write about it and think about it and talk about it. That's when that's your dedication, that's why, you know, you let the critics decide, because that's all they do.
And that's their job. Their job is to look and analyze these things, because we can't. We don't have the time, and that's what they do. So that's why it's better for them to have a little more weight for this. And I totally understand why they would. You don't want it turning into a free-for-all. Like, that, if you want to hear what the audiences think is the best game of the year, just go on Reddit or N4G, and that'll tell you.
Okay, so the Game Awards were great. And by the way, Nintendo won several awards. Super Mario Odyssey won a few awards. Splatoon, Best Multiplayer, they won Best Mobile Game. Odyssey won Best Family Game. But yeah, Zelda came out the big winner. I honest to God think it's the best game of the year. We're going to be doing our list next week of the best video games of 2017, at least Nintendo games. But apart from Bayonetta 3 getting announced, which, by the way, once again, we just get a logo, which I thought was... I don't know. I just find that stuff funny. It's
like, there's like a little bit of a tiny cutscene.
Cutscene, yeah.
Yeah, which is probably the cutscene at the start of the game, right? But it's nice to know we're getting Bayonetta 3, and it's exclusive awesome. To the Switch.
Yes.
Now, Tim, there's been about 35 games released on the Nintendo Switch this past week. I can't keep up anymore. I'm dying to play Nine Parchments. And now we have Yooka-Laylee coming out in a few days. We have the whole entire Mega Man collection. Like, I'm a huge Mega Man fan. Like, every single Mega Man game, which I own, times 3, which I'm going to buy yet again because it's coming out for the Switch. The Mega Man Legacy 1 and 2, and then they're going to release Mega Man X, the collection. Jesus Christ, we're getting every single Street Fighter game now on the Switch. We're releasing that bundle, which is insane, for the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter 1. There's so many games getting released next year. And a lot of people are worried about 2018. It's like, oh, Nintendo released like Xenoblade, Zelda, and Mario, and we got Mario Kart. So what's going to come out next year? Man, I think we're going to get so much next year, especially E3.
I was super hyped about Bayonetta 3. I'm so glad they're bringing that back. I just assumed that Bayonetta 2 didn't make enough money where it was ever going to come back. But that was such an awesome game, and I'm so glad that Bayonetta 3, it's just another exclusive. People will complain about it because they want to be able to play it. Go buy a Switch. That's all I got to say. I think Nintendo should do whatever they can to make sure that Bayonetta kind of gets folded into their thing. I know that Platinum will always own Bayonetta, but Nintendo can, you know, kick them a little money every now and again to make sure that Bayonetta stays on Nintendo consoles.
Make like Disney and just buy the company?
Well, they don't even have to do that. All they got to do is make sure that Platinum... I don't think Platinum would ever... Well, they could buy Platinum, obviously, but but I think they just need to make sure that Platinum understands, like, this is going to be our thing. We're going to keep publishing this as long as you guys want to keep making them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's not forget that... and Tim... This goes back to the Game Boys podcast when I was listening earlier today. You guys were talking about like games getting released on systems. And yeah, PlayStation 4 had an amazing lineup, no doubt. But Nintendo Switch, like Super Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, Mario Rabbids, Splatoon 2, all of the indie games. But also like games like Wolfenstein, 2 are coming out on the Switch. You know, it's not out yet, but they're coming out on the Switch. Like, that's like one of the most critically acclaimed games of the year. Like, one of the best games of the year. There's just so much to play. Like, so much to play. And it boggles my mind when someone says there's no games on Nintendo Switch. I'm like, are you kidding me?
You're clearly just not playing, because there's also just a giant update for Splatoon. Like, if you want to go back, there's a ton more in that game now, too.
Go look at the PS4's first year and tell me how many exclusives plus other games it had. All it did was basically deliver a lot of ports from the last generation. That was what the first year of PS4 was. The Switch is killing it this year, not only with exclusives, but with tons of indies. Yeah. It's having one of the best first years of any console ever.
And some of those indies, some of the best indies, are actually exclusive to the Switch as well, which is really, really cool.
Exactly. It is having an outstanding first year. There's so much to play. There's not enough time to play all these things.
No, not at all.
And I still haven't played Rhyme, although, you know, I want to play Yooka-Laylee, though I know I've heard that that's sort of mediocre.
But improvements on the Switch, Patrick, believe it or not.
I still want to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nintendo helped them out to improve the game for the Switch.
So waiting for the Switch was actually the right answer.
Right, I'm actually going to pick it up, guys. I mean, look, I'm curious enough about the game. I've heard mixed reviews. Apparently, it's not like Banjo-Kazooie levels of greatness, but come on, that's Banjo-Kazooie, you know? Like,
I just want a 3D platformer. Like,
yeah.
I love those games.
I would tell you to play Hat in Time, but you don't have a PlayStation.
But I can't. Yeah, I've heard that one's great. And I hope that comes to the Switch. Maybe it will.
Yeah. Well, there's also like a lot of like indie games that we missed out on. Last year, like Owlboy is coming to the Switch, like very, very, very soon. So speaking of which, Zelda got some new DLC. Anyone play it?
Yeah,
I've played a fair amount.
It's pretty amazing.
Do you think so? I'm gonna say I was let down. I'll be 100% honest. My initial reaction was big time disappointment. Yeah. And now I'm like a little bit higher on, not higher on it. I'm like a little more okay with it now, but I still think it's been overall a disappointment for me.
Okay. I actually really, really like it. I mean, first of all, like, so when you start up the game, if depending on if you pick the quest or not, you have to return back to the Temple of Time. You return a Sheikah Slate, and then you get this new weapon. And so the way it works is that if you carry the weapon, the weapon can destroy and kill any enemy, even a guardian, within one strike. But you can only carry a half a heart. So even if you eat food...
It's a quarter of a heart. Everything in the game will kill you.
Yeah, so even if you eat like tons of food, like your life meter will decrease to a quarter of a heart. So you have to basically go around, kill every single enemy within a restricted like area, and defeat 4 shrines. So that's what you got to do to start. And then there's a boss later on, and then you get the motorcycle, which is amazing. I mean, how do you not like the motorcycle?
Well, I haven't beaten the whole thing, so I don't have the motorcycle yet. But I'm about halfway through, like the memories things, you know, and finding all those different little shrines, doing the old, fighting all the old bosses all over again. So right off the bat, Breath of the Wild is all about exploration, right? It's about giving you choice, giving you options, go out in the world, do what you want to do, accomplish things how you want to accomplish them. And I guess what this did is it didn't. When I pictured DLC for this, I was expecting more to explore, more to discover, right? To find things out, to find other stuff. And instead what it did is it threw me into a Cave of Trials challenge. Thanks. I already didn't play the Cave of Trials, the Master Sword one in this, because I find those to be tedious. And I found this tedious. Oh, here you go. We're going to do some artificial challenge by giving you a one-shot kill, but you can also be killed in one shot. So we're just going to make this thing, for whatever reason, I don't know why, especially because as soon as you kill an enemy, it saves it. So even if you die, that enemy won't return. So really, you could just die 1,000 times and you'll still be able to beat this. There's no real challenge in it. But it's required. This is required right off the bat. You can't go explore anything else in this quest until you've done this. And that is not Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild was, here, I'm just going to let you like walk out in the woods and you sort of do whatever you want to do. Like, go for it, man. You can go anywhere right from the start. And this new DLC is like, nope, we're going to send you on basically what amount to fetch quests. I mean, you do get to play some more shrines, which is fine. I like shrines, but I was expecting more from this quest. This doesn't feel like a quest. This just feels like I'm tacking on some additional shrines.
Yeah, but unlike the previous DLC, which is really just like a challenge, like to see how to challenge your skills, especially when it comes to combat, at least with this, you get new items, new vehicles, and you do get extra shrines.
Yeah, and I like the shrines. I'm glad they gave more shrines. I wanted a quest, and this is not a quest. This is just I don't know. They might as well just put all the shrines in a row, and I would have been happier with that without having to warp back and forth across the map. I'm not exploring anything doing this, really. I'm just warping from place to place. They mark it on your map. There's nothing for me to discover. I'm just going through the motions so that I can get into the shrine and play the shrine. I would rather just line up all 16 new shrines and I can go in each one and enjoy the shrines and then not have to do all the other stuff. I just don't feel like there's any quest here. And when they said that there'd be a new quest, and maybe that's just on me. I will say that is on me. I imagined more and thus I was disappointed. I was imagining new areas to explore and I am disappointed that there weren't.
I think a whole bunch of us were hoping that maybe there would be some sort of like new island to go to discover.
Yeah,
and explore
just an island.
Over.
Didn't have to be a whole new big world. Just one island or something would have been great.
That said, I love the one-hit obliterator. Like, I really, really like that. It's a callback to something like Devil May Cry's Heaven and Hell mode. And so I'm really enjoying that. It feels like a test of your skill, but with a goal in clear sight, I guess. So quick confession, you guys. I saved up all of the DLC for right now. Like, I didn't touch any of it until right now so that I would have more all in one go, which has been really cool. So I have a ton of different armor to go discover. I have the Trial of the Sword to go do. And I played, like, some of that. I did the first part of that. And then I went and did the start. I'm like halfway through this other new expansion. And I personally really liked that extra challenge. It didn't add to anything. In fact, like some of the enemies I think are despawned for this. But I really like the you have to calculate your moves. You have to think about it. I get that like you probably can die, but I've been trying really, really hard not to. So I put on all of my ninja gear and I've been sneaking everywhere and I try to get like the best start to an attack that I can. I come in paragliding and then I drop a couple of guys with arrows and then I drop and get the biggest guy really, really quick with my one hit obliterator and then get another one. And I find that really, really fun. I find that it's a cool test of skill that then leads into a shrine where the simplest of things can kill you, because let's face it, by the end of the game, nothing can really damage you that much.
Well,
nothing,
so here's my problem with that design, though. I think this is wrong. This is very, very wrong for this game from a design approach, because again, people did love, you know, Eventide Island, and they do like some of the challenges. There are a lot of people who like the Trial of the Sword. That's fine. Those are all optional. Those are optional things that you do not have to do. And we've had this discussion. I think you guys like it more than I do. I think the combat is still kind of clunky and clumsy. So it's not my favorite element of the game. And now I'm basically forced to, on this quest, when they've already, in the DLC, they've already given you a challenge with the Trial of Sword. I don't need another challenge, unless I want to take it. This one's required, though. And I think that is bad. That was a bad way to design this new quest, because again, this Zelda was all about options and letting you do things your way. Instead, it places arbitrary restrictions on you at every level. So I just think overall it doesn't fit Breath of the Wild. It would have been better off as a little side. You may like the challenge, but there are others who don't play Breath of the Wild for that. And
yeah, but you can't make everybody happy. Like, and the thing is, like, I'm not a game developer, so I'm not entirely sure how difficult it would be to create a whole entire like quest that revolves around this amazing narrative and a story that might be incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to shove into this game. Whereas with this, you know, because it is restricted, like you're within this area, it's like a game within a game, and you have like these little challenges to do. Like maybe it's a matter of like resources, or they just can't give us that extra story mode. Like I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, to Tim's point, like, you've already explained why you don't like it, but I think the reason why I like it is what Tim said, is that by the time you get to 160 hours into Zelda and you have, like, all your hearts and all your armor, et cetera, it's really hard to die. And so it's nice to be put into this moment of weakness, a moment of which, like, you've only got a quarter of a heart and you have to kill off all of these enemies and defeat four shrines without dying. And, like, that's the kind of challenge I kind of want that late in the game. Whereas with Super Mario Odyssey, and, like, I do like that game and everything, but although it does get a little bit more difficult towards the end, it's still a pretty easy game.
Well, and I think I just think the challenge should have been optional, because that's not what Breath of the Wild was all about. It was not an overly challenging game.
To that point, though, it, no matter what, it was going to be a narrative restricted behind some new content. So I get where you're coming from, but no matter what, it would have been, even if it was like a totally new area to explore, then I could come out and say, you know what, the exploring wasn't my thing, but now I have to do this arbitrary exploring in a new area to unlock this other content, the narrative. No matter what, like, no matter how you look at it, it's going to be restricted.
Wait a second, Tim. If you didn't like the exploring in Breath of the Wild, then you probably weren't buying the DLC. Let's face facts here. That game is about exploring. It's not about combat. That is not an action game.
Patrick, for some of us, a Zelda game is a puzzle game. For some of us, we like the combat. For me, I'm both of those things. I also like the exploring. I'm just a big Zelda fan. I've been a big fan from the beginning. But I'm just saying, no matter what, it's going to be content that's locked behind some objective. No matter what, no matter how that shapes up, that's how this has to work. It can't just be like an entirely new narrative that you just go discover out in the wild.
Wait a second. Again, I have to restate this because we have to be real here. Nobody plays a Zelda game just for the combat. Nobody does. It starts you off with pure combat. This is a pure combat challenge. We're just doing combat here. And it gates everything else that comes after that is gated just behind a pure combat challenge right off the bat.
It's not pure combat, though, because you can only take one hit. So behind the combat, there's the puzzle of how do you approach it.
You could argue that all combat is puzzle then, but then we're going to get into semantics.
You're missing the most important thing about this. It's DLC. And so the thing is, you say it's not giving you an option, but the option is you just don't buy the DLC. But here's where it becomes problematic. Here's the point I'm trying to make. Here's where it becomes problematic if we were to switch things around and do it how you would want it. So now they introduce this sort of like narrative and it's fantastic and we're all happy, all three of us, right? But then people can turn around and be angry because now you're sort of like, you know, forcing fans to pay the $20 or so in order to get the extra narrative. Like, there's a big difference in having your fans pay an extra $20 for something that's like story-wise. It's like you know, like there's a huge difference between story narrative as opposed to just like DLC, which is a battle system. Like, I would be sort of like upset if I had to pay an extra $20 to actually get the full story of this game.
I agree with you. I never said anything about story. I never once mentioned story. I don't care about story. I wanted a quest. I wanted something new to explore. I don't care. They don't need to lock story behind it. There's no problem with what I'm asking, which is just deliver me more Breath of the Wild. What they didn't do was deliver more Breath of the Wild. Here's my other problem, Tim. Because I would not have bought this if I would have known what it was. I would have never dropped my $20 on this. But because they promised a new quest, and this is stretching quest a little bit.
I think you need to redefine quest, though. You want map. You want more map. That's what you're saying. In my opinion, this is a quest. This is like a quest in any video game, whether it's like an RPG, whether it's a shooter like Destiny or something. A quest is often like recycling areas, but with different objectives. That's what a quest is in a video game.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's that I got exactly
that
what
definition I, does not. No way. That the definition is false. A quest does that, not no, that, imply
I
that.
I have played three years of Destiny. That is what a quest is in that game.
In that game, yes. But people complain about Destiny all the time, though.
How many side quests does Breath of the Wild have? It has tons. Like, I thought, you see, this is where I'm getting confused. That's a side quest.
Exactly. There you go.
I thought Patrick was, like, I thought, this is why I got confused, Patrick. I thought you were asking for something that had, like, a story to it.
No.
But then if you want a quest, but then how's, like, this quest different than from, like, a quest in Kokoriko Village where they want you to get, like, a chicken or something? It's still a quest.
Yeah, and you don't have to do that quest. You're paying for Breath of the Wild as an adventure, but you don't have to do every side quest that you want. It's not gating anything behind that side quest. Not really. But regardless, those side quests, and by the way, they're called side quests, not quests. Your quest is setting out to defeat Ganon, blah, blah, blah. The big quest.
But that's what I'm saying. So do you want story?
No, no. There's a difference between story and quest. There's barely any story in Breath of the Wild anyway.
Okay, there's barely any story, but you're saying there's a difference between side quest and quest, and you want a quest. And you're saying a quest, for example, is like going out and defeating Ganon. So that, to me, still has like a story to it. Like, it has like a middle, beginning, and end. So what exactly would make you happy with this DLC? Like, give us an example.
Give me an adventure. Give me an adventure. Like, give me Breath of the Wild. Give me more Breath of the Wild. Because what they didn't do was give me more Breath of the Wild. Instead, they came up with arbitrary challenges. And that's just basically it. They gave me more shrines, which is fine once you actually get to the shrines.
I'm so confused. I feel like one of us is talking Chinese.
Well,
yeah, but
that's the way I feel, though. You guys.
It culminates in a new dungeon. That's straight more to experience. That's not there before.
Yeah, and every new shrine is more to experience than that's not there before, too. And every, like, new item that you have is more that you haven't experienced before, either. I don't know. Look, guys, this is... I know Breath of the Wild because I put 200 hours into it, and this is not Breath of the Wild. I enjoyed every other aspect of that game more than I've enjoyed this DLC. And had I known what the DLC actually was, and this is part of the problem with DLC in the first place, is them not informing you what it is going to be. And maybe it's my fault for prepaying for it. You know, part of it is my fault for loving the game so much that I assumed that what they delivered was going to be good. And what I got was just kind of mediocre, and I probably should have never prepaid for it. But even their trailer makes it look completely different than it really is. So it's just it's just additional shrines. Anybody out there listening, what you get for the DLC is additional shrines and another dungeon, and that's it. There's nothing else to this. If you love shrines, by all means, buy the DLC. I think they were pretty on point
with what they said it was. It's a little bit more about the champions and a new dungeon, and that's what I bought, and that's what I wanted. So
watch that trailer and tell me it has anything, any of the feel of what you're actually doing in this thing. To me, it's a huge disappointment.
I don't know. I think you're underselling what they provided with this DLC.
You walk away with like vehicles that completely changes the way you can cross the entire map. I think it offers puzzle solving. It offers some exploration. It offers like the combat system, a new boss, like new vehicles, new weapons. I mean, it's not like a whole entire Breath of the Wild, but for a DLC, I think it does a lot better than the last DLC, which was basically just a challenge. It is a challenge, but I feel like there's a lot more to it. And like the four shrines, like there are four shrines in which you do have to solve puzzles. It's a little bit more challenging, especially because you only have a quarter of a heart. Man, I'm totally like baffled right now, but agree to disagree.
You know, it gives you items that are worthless if you've already explored the entire land. I mean, if you haven't explored all of Breath of the Wild, then, hey, having the motorcycle is great. I have no reason to cross the land anymore. I have everything already. I've gotten all the side quests, and I've gotten all the Korok seeds. I mean, I wanted a reason to step back into this game and find some magic again, and I got none of that. It's just like, here's some... Like I said, it would have been better if they just lined up the shrines. At least that would have been... I wouldn't have had to go through the tedious like backtracking over stuff I'd gone through a million times already to actually have fun. I don't know. I don't need to go back over the land. The motorcycle means nothing to me ultimately, and neither do any of the armor things because I've beaten it all already. So for anybody who's beaten it, that's why I
kind of get that. And I think that was a mistake that they made, in that the motorcycle is the reward at the end. And I think that they should have given it to me to explore through the new content so that I had a fun new way to travel, because then I wouldn't have teleported at all. If I had the motorcycle at the outset, that's how I would have chosen to get around. And so that I kind of get where you're coming from. But for me personally, this is exactly what I wanted. It dropped me back into one of my favorite sandboxes, gave me a new objective, gave me a sort of different way to play, because now I have to approach everything with caution, which I didn't before. I threw caution to the wind by the end of the game. This gave me a new approach and then gave me more to do, gave me more to experience within Breath of the Wild, which is all I kind of wanted, a reason to get back into it, because I had already beaten it all, so I didn't have a reason to really play anymore. This gave me a reason to play more. There's more to collect, and it gave me a different challenge on top of that. So I think it provided exactly what I needed.
But I think it also does a lot in terms of like fleshing out the characters and the backstory of a lot of these characters. I mean, Game Explained just posted a fantastic 11-minute video that captures a lot of the footage within the DLC pack that expands on the mythology and the story and the characters. Like, it does so much for a DLC. Like, there's just so much there.
They actually said that it expanded on the characters. Have you seen some of those flashbacks? I've already forgot. I just played one last night. I've already forgotten. There was so little information in. I played Mipha's. There was so little information in there that I've forgotten what was in there. It was so pointless. Like, it did nothing for her character. It was like, here's just more scenes to show this exact same character that we showed you already.
Well, you get a lot of additional cutscenes. You can battle the four divine beasts again. And then as you do all of these, like, quote-unquote quests or chores, whatever the hell way you want to define it, there's, I think, 11 minutes of extra footage. Which 11 minutes of extra footage is a lot of footage for, you know, like, cutscenes in
a video
game.
Yeah.
For a game that doesn't focus in
fine. For a DLC pack.
But like you said, so I think Nintendo was afraid of locking story content behind a paywall, and so what is actually in there doesn't add to the story at all. It's just like, it's cutscenes, yeah, but it doesn't add anything, because I don't think they wanted anybody complaining that there were some really, really cool parts of the story locked behind the DLC. So they didn't lock any cool parts.
And maybe that's the problem with DLC in a game like Zelda in the first place, because it's a little bit easier to say, like, you give us $20, we give you this many tracks in Mario Kart and this many more characters. Like, that makes sense. That's a very one-to-one direct correlation of payment. Like, that makes a lot of sense. It's very, very straightforward. And I'm guessing with Zelda, it's a lot trickier because, like, yeah, how do you really add more narrative without stepping on toes? Because we live in an outrage culture that loves to be mad about anything. It's super tricky, honestly. So maybe DLC isn't right for Zelda, but I feel like this is more for the people that are drawing fan art of the champions, that love the champions and want to know more, or just like this sandbox. They say, hey, you can be in here and we'll give you a little bit more to do for $20. And people like me are like, yeah, hell yeah, I'm in.
And for me, I'd rather... here's what I would rather they do. Better descriptions would help. Just say, we're giving you additional, more challenging stuff. For those of you who felt like the initial game was too easy, we're going to give you some more challenging material. I would have opted out right then, because I know what more challenging means in Zelda. And I would have been fine with that. I wouldn't have been disappointed that I paid for it. I would have been like, yeah, I don't really care. I've never cared about the challenges. Like, the Caves of Trials, I've never played those things, because I just don't like them.
See, but this one made it
that way I would have been informed, right? And everybody who likes those things and wanted more of a challenge, like you guys like the challenge, you would have been happy and you would have wanted it, and I would have been able to opt out.
Challenge isn't all that there is to it. This, like, took me back to, like, the Trials of the Sword, though, I really appreciated, because it took me back to one of my favorite parts of the game, Eventide. It took everything away from me and said, go start fresh. Like, build Link up again, see if you can still do this. I appreciate that kind of challenge. It wasn't just like, hey, here's an endless horde of enemies, survive as long as you can. It was that, but with a different slant that I actually like.
That was fun.
I don't know. That's such a small part of what the DLC is in the end.
I mean,
anyway,
that's the beginning, though. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. The DLC involves more than that. But that's the beginning that you must clear, and you must do it four times.
It was fun every freaking time.
I was so glad when I cleared the Arbiter thing. So relieved that they wouldn't have to do it again.
Anyhow, for our listeners, I think it's fantastic. There's four quests, I'm using the word quest, and then there's a final quest of which there's something big that happens. There's a callback to the original Legend of Zelda game. And then it doesn't actually give you a true ending, which I think is interesting, which makes me hope that they're going to keep on releasing DLC for this game and or release a direct sequel. Because at the end of the final quest, the fifth one, something happens, and I just like the fact that we don't get resolution. I honestly think it's fantastic, and I love the motorcycle, the motorbike, the hog bike, whatever you call it. So I'm happy I spent my $20. I wasn't too happy with the last DLC. I thought it was just like padding while we waited, But this kind of did the trick.
Well, it was all one, right? Because that $20 covered everything. It was a pack, so you didn't really have a choice whether you could buy one or the other. This was all a package deal.
And having played none of it and starting Zelda back up and having all of those side quests to go on, all of those armors to hunt down on top of the new like main quest lines or the EX main quest lines, I'm really, really happy with it. I'm really enjoying it. I like the two different approaches to the different expansions, and it's giving me a reason to go back into Breath of the Wild, and I'm realizing, like, now, maybe even more than when I originally played it, why the game will stand the test of time and why I liked it so much in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's pretty special. I mean, I know a lot of games release DLC throughout the year, but it's kind of new to Nintendo, and I think it's pretty special that we sort of started the year, I mean, it came out in March, but whatever, with this game, put in each, like, about 150 hours at the start, and then here we are at the end of the year, and we're still playing Zelda, and I honest to God think that this is one of the greatest games ever made. And you know what? I went back and I read my, it wasn't like, it was a review, but I didn't like score it. But like my review of the game when it was released, I think I wrote it like 2.5 weeks after, or 2 weeks after the game was released. And I do not take back one single word I wrote in that review. And I remember like one of our editors was like super pissed off because he thought it was like just over exaggerating like the hype for how great this game is. And I don't think so. I think the game is fantastic. And before we sign out, because we're running long as per usual, I will say that when we voted on our list of the 200 greatest Nintendo games, which will be published at the same time this podcast gets released, number two, and it almost took the top spot, it lost out by one vote, was Breath of the Wild. So our writers, our staff really thought about it, and a lot of people just thought that this game was good enough to vote high. Ocarina of Time won by one vote.
Yeah, and everything that I've said about the DLC, that has not diminished my opinion of this game whatsoever.
Diminished cap.
And exactly. I think if you go back and listen to earlier podcasts, I was a little wary of this game when I first started playing it, because it felt so different from other Zeldas. I wasn't sure. Like, I think I remember saying, like, oh, I don't think I'd put this even in my top five just yet. I am going to have a hard time not saying this is number one Zelda of all. And it is definitely one of the greatest games achievements Nintendo has ever made. This game is the gift that, and I won't say it keeps on giving, but it gave for a long, long time. When I put in that original 200 hours, I enjoyed every single minute of it. This is one of the best games of all time, and it's definitely, I probably am going to have to lean toward best Zelda game of all time.
Yeah, I think it's definitely up there. I don't want to call it the best Zelda game of all time, because I think Zelda has so long been defined by like the style of dungeon and the tools that Link uses to get through those dungeons. And so I think once we get a game in the style of Breath of the Wild that better integrates fuller dungeons, then I think we'll have it. I think we'll have the best Zelda game ever made. But that world is so beautifully realized. That sandbox is just such a joy to inhabit and play with. The fact that I can approach an enemy so many different ways, whether it's hitting him with a metal box, throwing a magic bomb, shooting him with arrows, or hitting them with whatever tool I happen to have at the time, that's great. I love everything about that. So Breath of the Wild will easily be remembered as the best game of 2017, and I wouldn't be surprised if it goes down as maybe like the best game of the decade, because I can't even think of anything that truly rivals how much I've enjoyed this game in recent memory. So it's been fun experiencing it with you guys. It'll be nice that Breath of the Wild is going to take a back seat now, though, and we can focus on other Nintendo games. But I'm sure it's going to get mentioned again, as Ricky mentioned. We're going to look back at 2017, talk about what it looked like as Nintendo fans by the end of this year. So there's a lot more to look forward to on this show. So make sure you tune in next week and each consecutive week. Patrick, thank you for joining us. Where can we find you online? Where does the hate mail go?
Oh, and you can send it all to editor at Goomba Stomp. I don't answer that email. You can find me, of course, online at GoombaStomp.com and also on Twitter at Sword Cinema.
And Ricky D, how about you?
On Twitter, I'm GoombaStompMag. I've been extremely busy the past 30 days, but things seem to be winding down. So hopefully, I will be writing again. And yeah, if you want to send feedback, it is editor at GoombaStomp.com. But that is my email. And I think that's it. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, you name it, we're there.
Yeah, you can also send hate mail to at the Freemason, MAISON. Especially if Persona 5 was your favorite game of the year, or Wolfenstein, or whatever it was, you can suck it. Send your hate mail. You can also find me at NExpress Nintendo, where I do my video game talking on Twitter, or just check out my work on Goomba Stomp. There's a lot of awesome stuff there, and like Ricky said, check out the anniversary huge list of the best Nintendo games of all time. Keep an eye peeled for the best games of the year as well. Lots to look forward to, so keep checking out GoombaStomp.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating. That goes a huge way to making this podcast even bigger and better. We would hugely appreciate that, so do us that solid. Beyond that, we'll talk to you more next week.